from noon to 4 p.m. and rec swim from 2 to 4:15. And on Thursday and Friday, we have lap swim from 12 to 5:45 and rec swim from 2 to 4:15. There are group swim lessons and private lessons available. If you're interested, please reach out to our recreation division. Passes to participate in rec and lap swim do need to be purchased in person. You can do that at Colony Park Community Center. And you can register for lessons. You can do those online through our ActiveNet portal or by visiting atascadero.org. A reminder of our upcoming Coffee with a Cop. This one will feature a special appearance by our canine Pomic. Please join our Atascadero Police Department tomorrow, June 24th, at Jobella's Coffee from 9 to 11 a.m. You can come enjoy a cup of coffee, meet our local officers, and ask your questions and find out what's going on with our police department. As I mentioned, summer is fully in swing, and that includes our Saturday in the Park summer concert series. Our next concert is this Saturday, June 27th at 6:30 p.m. That'll feature the Rockin' BS Band. All of our concerts are outdoors at the Atascadero Lake Park Bandstand. They are free to attend. You'll get to dance with your friends, hear some great music, bring a low back chair, and there's also food available for purchase. Just a reminder that the Women in Blue Leadership Camp will be held June 30th, 2026. That's from 9 to 4 p.m. at Colony Park Community Center. Registration is due today, so if you are interested, this is for ages 6th grade through 12th grade. It's geared for female youth interested in pursuing a career in law enforcement. There will be guest speakers from Atascadero Police Department, Cal Poly Police Department, the CHP, probation, the SLO Sheriff Office, the FBI, and the District Attorney's Office. It'll include a live canine demonstration, and the youth will learn a small portion of forensics involved with how we lift fingerprints. Again, it's open to 6th to 12th graders, and lunch and refreshments will be provided for participants. Atascadero 4th of July Music Festival is being hosted by the Atascadero Printery Foundation and Tiny Porch Concerts. That'll be held on July 4th at the Atascadero Lake Park from 3 to 8 p.m. You can purchase tickets online for that. It's a music festival with a dynamic music lineup, including Shane Alexander, Bee in the Hive, the Coffis Brothers, and the Barbershop Quartet. It will also feature food, local wine, and craft beer for purchase. As a reminder, all fireworks are prohibited in the city of Atascadero. Please, please, please remember to celebrate the 4th of July safely, and that fireworks are prohibited. This includes what are labeled safe and sane fireworks. So just a reminder, no fireworks. If anyone is caught lighting or in possession of any fireworks, they will be cited and fined. And we wish everyone a very happy 4th of July celebration, but also to please remember to keep our community safe and to not light or possess those fireworks. And then, as a reminder, upcoming this summer is Cruisin' Weekend, and those registration is currently on sale, and those are limited. Registration is limited, so for anyone interested in participating, get your registration in while it's still available. Cruisin' Weekend is August 21st through 22nd. Friday night is the 33rd annual Hot El Camino Cruise Night. That'll be from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. along El Camino Real here in the downtown. On Saturday in the morning will be the 35th Mid-State Cruisers Car Show. That's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Lake Park. And then Saturday night, it'll be Dancing in the Streets here in the downtown, and that will be from 5 to 10 p.m. Again, a reminder that registration is open for those wishing to register their cars to participate. Passes are limited, and you can register in through the Colony Park Community Center at 5599 Traffic Way. Mail-in registration is accepted through Friday, August 1st, or while registration passes are available. Or you can do the walk-in pre-registration, which also is Friday, August 1st until 4 p.m., and that's 4 p.m. sharp on Friday the 21st, if passes remain available. Passes are not going to be sold night of the event. For cruise night registration or more info about the weekend, please go to visitatascadero.com/events, or you can call our recreation department 805-470-3360. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and just remind everybody that event information for all city and city-sponsored events and information on the Central Coast Zoo and all things to do here in the city, please visit atascadero.com. And for all city-related business, atascadero.org.
Thank you. Now, are you sure that that band is not the Rockin' Bees?
Yes, sorry. Rockin' Bees. Sorry. That's not what was on my form. I'm sorry.
For the clarification. Does any other member of the council have a question?
Rockin' Bees. Yeah, that should have been a small S. Sorry. Sorry about that.
They are a good band to have heard.
Okay. Let's start on my left. Councilmember P.
So how much of the lake park is going to be fenced off for buying a ticket to enter? I mean, are we blocking off a lot of the, I mean, how much of it's going to be blocked off from somebody who's just going to enjoy the park
For the
4th of July?
Fourth event? I think they have in the past, although maybe our community services director can answer that, but in the past, it's sort of been to the walkway and just sort of that grass area that's been around the bandstand. It hasn't included all of the park. So like the playground has still been open, the whole downslope part of the park where all of the barbecue areas, all of that has still been open for park users.
And there's all right around the bandstand area up to the pathway, up to the playground mm-hmm. is typically where they set up right there.
And the whole thing is a fundraiser for the printery?
Yes, it is. It's all for the printery for July 4th.
So is the printery managing, security managing all the different things, or is the city donating all that?
We have an intake meeting for that to go over that with them. We haven't had the intake meeting yet, but typically they have their security people, like their volunteers and things like that. So, yeah, it's city sponsored, so we work with them on it. Thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, thank you. We will move on to community forum. And community forum is reserved for persons wishing to address the council on any matter that is not on the agenda. And the Brown Act does prohibit the council from entering into a discussion on an item not on the agenda. So we, at most, will be able to answer, ask staff to answer quick question or refer staff to meet with that individual, perhaps at the back of the room. Speakers have 3 minutes, and we ask that you state your name for the record. Please, first speaker.
Good evening, council staff. Jeff Oslin. Three things on my agenda tonight. First of all, being this is part of Terry's wheelhouse, I want to say that the Coach Hartzell in volleyball and the volleyball program going on for the camps is phenomenal. It's incredible what's going on in Colony Park on that. So kudos to the rec staff for that. Secondly, I'm sure council's getting sick of this, so now I'm going to bring out a little laundry. I've been requesting on behalf of residents for over 5 months to address lighting and the noise complaints that happen at Valley Fresh area and the construction area over there and the highlights. We're into 5 months of me speaking about this. A lady did call into the city, was told that it is a civil matter. That's why I got involved. To my understanding, contact is yet to be made either to the builder or the owner of the market. I will continue on this soap opera box forever because you're talking about doing other projects in town and we're not enforcing the codes, which this council puts into play. It is time to step up and get this corrected, please. Secondly, or third of all, I'd like clarification on fireworks, please, because my understanding is you may not have any illegal fireworks in the city of Atascadero, but if I was to purchase safe and sane fireworks and not use them in the city of Atascadero, but use them in a area of the county that is legal, such as Templeton on my property, that would be legal. So I'd like clarification, please. Thank you.
Okay, next speaker, please.
I'm Cindy Castle. I've been a resident here since 1982, and I want to tell you what happened to me because it upset me. Last month on the Friday of the Tamale Festival, I was deeply angered when I returned from delivering meals on my Meals That Connect route and found access to the senior center that houses the kitchen completely blocked with big, huge, heavy bollards. I had picked my meals up maybe 90 minutes earlier. Business was as usual with drivers going in and out. There was no warning that the street would be blocked soon. I was blown away. I looked around for somebody. I tried to pull a bollard out, and they are big, huge, and really heavy. No matter what, I was going to have to hoof it with the 40-gallon cooler and big insulated bag. Then I became livid. How could this have been allowed to happen? I am a senior volunteering to help other seniors in this community who find themselves in a pickle, impaired, and isolated. I want the city to care about these people. And it is very discouraging for me as a volunteer to have no respect from the city. So I want the city to care about services to seniors and respect the volunteer community. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
I'm Jill Aguilar. My name is Jill Aguilar. And I am the site manager for the Meals That Connect program, senior nutrition, that's located on East Mall at the back of the senior center. As you may know, MTC is a nonprofit business that's been operating in that location for at least 30 years. We operate daily delivering meals to homebound seniors and also serve seniors who come into the dining room. Currently, there are approximately 60 plus meals delivered daily by 5 volunteers, her being one of them, delivery drivers, and approximately 15 to 20 seniors coming to eat in the dining room. The reason I'm speaking today is to request assistance from the city during the events that require the road, specifically East Mall, to be closed down during the times that MTC is serving seniors. Those road closures have often negatively impacted the seniors visiting senior nutrition. I feel the changes that have occurred in this downtown area are very positive, and the events that take place provide a sense of community for our population. Although, unfortunately, over the last 3 years, a few of the events have impacted the daily routine of MTC and the senior center. I have attempted to work through and adjust to these challenges as they have occurred, but at times it's been very frustrating. I did have a conversation with Terry Banish, the community services director, last year during the Fall Festival, and I truly thought that we had a plan in place for future events, which was to have someone from the city staffed at the entrance to East Mall, allowing any MTC traffic to come through. She agreed to accommodate our request for assistance. That plan unfortunately failed on Friday, May 1st of this year for the Tamale Festival. I received a call from Terry at 10:30 a.m. telling me that the road was going to be closed and she was checking what time frame was needed for senior activities. I told her that we needed access until at least 1 p.m., which she agreed to. A half hour later, I received a phone call from Carol at the senior center telling me that the bollards have been put up and that the road is completely closed. I called Terry back and she said that should not have happened and was going to check into it and get back to me that never happened. So at this point, there are 5 drivers out delivering meals and seniors who are coming in to eat. As it turns out, all of the five drivers had to park on West Mall and carry the two heavy coolers, each of them, across the park, all of them in their 60s and 70s. I also had an 80-year-old man picking up meals for his wife who couldn't walk the distance from the city parking lot and had to call us to bring the meals to him. I'm sure there were other inconveniences that I did not hear about, as the majority of the seniors coming into MTC to dine could not get onto the street. The seniors who are volunteering their time and the ones coming into dine are just attempting to enrich their lives by staying involved and connected, and having to deal with these types of obstacles that can be avoided is extremely unacceptable, in my opinion. So as I stated earlier, I am truly hoping that the city of Atascadero can find some way to assist and accommodate Meals That Connect and the senior center so that this does not continue to happen.
Okay, thank you. Perfect timing. Next speaker, please.
There are many of us.
That's fine.
Mayor, yes. Council members, my name is Judy Hemingway. My husband, John Fellows, and I are members of the Atascadero Senior Center, which is separate from but co-located with Meals That Connect. We are here in support of Jill and Meals That Connect, who's just spoken about the problems they've had with street closures. Both of us are nonprofits providing services and support for seniors, people with disabilities, and other members of the community. The Senior Center has been in existence since 1974. We bounced back strongly after COVID, and we're continuing to grow. We currently have almost 300 members, 30 volunteers, and around 20 activities every week, roughly 225 person visits per week, not counting the Meals That Connect activities. Additionally, we have walk-ins. We have people coming for mobility aids, making queries, coming to teach or to speak, get a tour of the facilities, etc. We are entirely volunteer-run, and we receive no funding from the city. We depend fully on membership dues, fundraising, and a small endowment to fund our activities and pay our bills, such as utilities, maintenance, insurance, taxes, and currently dead tree removal. When the city closes East Mall for other city activities, it is not a minor inconvenience. It cuts off access to our facility entirely. Our members, volunteers, diners, and visitors cannot drive to the center. Many of us have mobility issues. Some of us do not drive at all and must arrange in advance for transportation to activities. A closure without adequate notice disrupts carefully made plans and can mean going without a meal, missing a health or wellness activity, or simply being left out. Advance notice is essential so that reliable, targeted assistance can be planned and in place when barriers are up, not improvised after the fact. Those of us who are members of the Senior Center have lived full and productive lives as contributing members of this community. We deserve to be considered and recognized, not overlooked. In the words of the immortal Aretha Franklin, all we're asking is for a little respect and some advance notice. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hello, my name is Denise Nielsen. I am a volunteer with the Atascadero Senior Center. And I'm here to speak in agreement of the issues of the uninformed closures of the street of East Mall and how that impacts us. I understand that you have work to do that may need closure of the street, but it would be very kind and respectful if you could let us know in advance when that would occur and stick to the plan. So say what you're going to do and do what you say. And we could inform our membership accordingly. And if it's possible, that your closure can occur after the hour of 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be the best thing for us. And that would be Monday through Saturday. Another item I would like to bring up to you is the fact that the curb in front of our facility on East Mall is too high, and people regularly trip on it and show us their wounds on their shins. And it happens more than you would imagine or guess, perhaps weekly, perhaps more often than that. It's quite surprising. And I'm expecting soon enough, it will be a serious injury that occurs. And so I would like to be on the record to say this is a problem that really needs to be addressed. And I personally don't step off the curb there or up the curb there. I wait and I go to the driveway entrance because I know that I will fall. So I encourage each of you to do that step yourself and see how it feels. Even park your car on that part of the road and see on the passenger side how it feels to open your car door. The curb is too high. The sidewalk is too high from the street, and it is a problem for us. So thank you for listening, and I do appreciate all that you do.
All right. Thank you. We don't normally allow people to come back and speak, but I think you had a few seconds left, if you can keep it very brief. Okay, you're reading it on behalf of someone else?
Yeah.
Okay. Please keep it brief. Thank you.
It's really brief. Okay. This is not from me, but I am writing this letter in support of the Senior Center and Meals That Connect, located on East Mall Road. Closing the road for park events impacts the accessibility to these nonprofits. I encourage the council to find a way for people to access these two facilities when there are events at the park. Meals That Connect have drivers that pick up food for delivery each morning and must return the containers later. Many of the drivers are seniors themselves and would find it difficult to carry these containers long distances. Thank you for your consideration in this matter, James and Susan Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you all. Anybody else wishing to address the council during community forum? Okay, seeing none, we're going to close community forum. I was aware, and I think council was aware, there was an issue, but thank you very much for telling us about the specifics and the impacts on you. I think we can apologize for that miscommunication. As I indicated, the Brown Act prohibits us from entering into a discussion regarding something not on the agenda, but I think you can rest assured we'll individually be discussing it with staff, and I think, you know, staff will tell us a little more about it, and obviously we'll look forward to what we can do in previous or future events, I should say. And I do want to thank you for what you do at both the Senior Center and Meals That Connect. It is very important for our community. So thank you for that. And regarding the questions Mr. Oslin asked, I believe, you know, that the new shopping center is subject to a conditional use permit, and Mr. Dunsmore, you can get together with any complainants or Mr. Oslin and address those issues, because they are subject to a CUP. So, all right, we will move on to our next item, which is item G1, which is a discussion of sidewalk vending regulations. And I'm going to turn that over, in this case, to our city attorney, Mr. Dave Fleischman. And I did want to thank everybody again for participating in community forum.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, tonight's item concerns regulation of sidewalk vending within the city. In 2019, the state legislature enacted Senate Bill 946, which established statewide rules governing vending in public parks and rights of way. That law limits what cities can regulate unless those regulations are directly tied to objective health, safety, and welfare concerns. And the legislature's intent in adopting Senate Bill 946 is in the bill itself to create entrepreneurial and economic opportunities, particularly for immigrant and low-income communities. Since SB 946 took effect, city has not experienced any significant issues with sidewalk vendors, but staff has seen recently an increase in some interest in street vending, which is why we're bringing this item forward. The current municipal code does have regulations regarding mobile eating and drinking vendors, but those provisions need to be updated to conform with SB 946. Two additional state laws have further shaped what a compliant local ordinance should look like. There's Senate Bill 972, which went into effect in January of 2023, and that exempted certain small-scale food vendors from getting county health permits if they only sell prepackaged non-perishable food and whole uncooked produce like strawberries or other types of fruits, provided they're in a display area of less than 25 square feet. More significantly, though, Senate Bill 635, which went into effect of January 1st of this year, limited the amount of information that the city can both collect and disclose regarding people engaged in sidewalk vendors, as well as providing information to state and federal authorities. So to help the council think through some of the options on the ordinance, I've attached the sidewalk vending ordinances from two of the cities that I represent, one from Solvang, one from Pismo Beach. The Solvang one is more current. The Pismo Beach one's a little bit out of date. It came out of COVID originally, and that's where the sidewalk vending was initially considered there. But they basically have the same similar administrative structure, geographic limitations. Solvang takes a little bit more restrictive approach on how they do it. They prohibit it in the central business district, whereas Pismo Beach kind of takes a more focused approach by listing the streets where it is and is not permitted. Regardless of which direction the council wants to take in setting forth an ordinance, there's several core elements that we would want to see and solicit your input on. The kind of permitting process, what types of local identification would be acceptable. ADA compliance is obviously something that we would want to ensure the businesses are engaged in. There are also seller's permits, tax certificates that have to be obtained, city business license. We'd want some background from you or direction from you on hours of operation and any safety buffers from traffic issues like driveway entrances, traffic signals, fire hydrants, and the like. I did want to point out that SB 946 does prohibit violations of the ordinance from being prosecuted criminally. So we can't do it as a misdemeanor or an infraction. It has to be administrative only, and there are fines there. And we also have to make sure that Senate Bill 635's privacy protections are taken into account. We're not asking you tonight to adopt an ordinance. We're asking more for direction on key policy choices as to where you would like to see this, where you think there are objective health safety concerns about the locations of these business, if you want any geographic restrictions, what the bases would be for those from life safety, health issues, and any other direction that you might have for us. Once we have that direction, we'll return with proposed ordinance for council's consideration, and we'll be happy to answer any questions for you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fleischman. I had a question quick in terms of where we're headed on this before I turn it over to my colleagues for other questions. In the report, we note that, we do have a small amount of regulation regarding mobile vehicle vendors like, food trucks. If we wanted to further address that, which I know Paso Robles has done recently, that would be a separate conversation, correct?
Completely separate conversation. There are also issues of state preemption if it's a vehicle, if they're located on a city street and they're just parked there. They're a vehicle like any other vehicle. If they're, however, vending to people on city sidewalks and they're in the street, it's a little bit different analysis. What SB 946 was designed to address is a kind of a smaller scale type of business. You've probably seen push carts in some areas. You've seen fruit stands, maybe flower stands, people selling flowers, but SB 946 wasn't intended to address catering trucks.
Okay, so we'll not ask questions or talk about that part this evening. Thank you. I'll start on my left, Councilmember Peak. Questions for staff?
Yes, thank you very much, Dave. What other vendors, other than the two taco stands that we've had recently, have been reported or been of concern?
I'm not aware of any that have been reported or of concern. The police chief may have taken in some complaints about some others, but there's nothing that's come across my desk, certainly, for prosecution.
So two taco stands and an occasional fruit stand here and there. How would a street vendor adopt ADA compliance?
You want to make sure that you have adequate sidewalk clearance if you're set up on a sidewalk. So I believe the standard to be a 36-inch minimum clearance.
They wouldn't be required to bring anything to make it ADA. You just
no,
make sure
no. That. It's just ensuring adequate clearance on the public sidewalk.
And what I think that's my two questions for now.
Okay, thank you. To be clear on that regarding the ADA, to me, what I thought I found lawyer speak in here regarding enabling pedestrian traffic, but I was looking for the phrase "don't block the sidewalk."
That's basically what the ADA compliance is, but there may be other things. For example, if you are drawing power from a generator that is off the sidewalk and you have an open cable, you might want to put some type of ramp over it so that someone with mobility issues would be both able to get over it, and persons with low visibility or low vision would be able to see it. So there are differences than just blocking the sidewalk that we would want to ensure.
Okay, because I mean, you know, anybody can trip on a cord, you know, whether they're, you know, have limited mobility or whatever. And it just struck me that I didn't see anything regarding the definition of not blocking the sidewalk, because the sidewalk is a public thoroughfare, and we're all entitled to walk down the sidewalk without interference and without it being blocked. And certainly anybody in a wheelchair is entitled to walk, to go down the sidewalk without interference, right?
Right. And these are definitions that we can put into the ordinance. We're kind of just at a high level right now as to what you would like to see, but certainly not obstructing a sidewalk in a manner to impede free access by members of the public, whether on an ADA basis or otherwise, is certainly something we can put in there.
Yeah. And obviously it's different. I mean, if you have a 6-foot wide sidewalk, you know, that's different than if you have a 4-foot sidewalk or a 10-foot wide sidewalk, you know, in terms of how much you take up. Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris, any questions?
Thank you. On the first page where it describes this type of activity, any vehicle, wagon, push cart, self-propelled, push-pull, et cetera, but this is in ours. It's defining the type of operation that we're discussing, but it doesn't necessarily describe the main one that we, or not the main one, I mean, the issue that this whole thing, we're talking about it now. That vendor that had been around Atascadero in multiple locations really can't be described by any of these descriptions. It was much bigger, and I don't even want to call it a display. I mean, it was a setup. I mean, it was quite extensive with everything that they had. So should we add verbiage to this that would make sure that we address somebody that just comes and sets up? I mean, it's mobile because they're going to take it down and put it in their truck when they're done. But it's not mobile in the sense that it's described in this paragraph.
Sure. And the language that you see there is from the existing code. What we would try to do is harmonize that to the extent possible. If we need to modify that to address SB 946, we certainly can. But to give you kind of a comparison, the second bill that came out restricted the requirement of health permits for displays that are 25 square feet or less. So the legislature recognizes that you have an objective standard for the size of it. That may be something the council wants to do, is set a maximum size for the type of mobile business that you have here. Some cities do kind of a cubic size. It can be no larger than 4x4x4. So you have a push cart and it can't be any bigger than that. That is a way to ensure free access on the sidewalks and so on. So there are different ways that you can address it, but having an objective standard like that, you do need to tie it to health, safety, welfare concerns under 946.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into my next one, where it said that if you're selling prepackaged or whole vegetables, uncooked stuff, if you have a space, if you're occupying a space that's 25 square feet or less, you don't need a health department permit. And that 25 square feet is really small. It's 5x5, obviously. And most of like the vegetable stands, which would qualify under that as Whole Foods, more or less. But if they're going to put up a small pop-up tent, it's going to be at least 8x8. So they've by far exceeded that. Can we make that a larger number to at least, which I think would be a reasonable to say, Well, if you're more than, you know, even if it's a 10 by 10, yeah, that's 100 square feet. That's a lot. It sounds like a lot, but is it a lot? I mean, it's a big tent. I mean, are they occupying the whole space or just where their table is? So I think it starts to become a little bit of a gray area. But I'm a little bit concerned about that size. I personally like to see that more. But if that's the county's number, I mean, we can't increase that because that's what the county.
Well, that's actually or the state. The state's number. Yeah, and you can set additional permissive standards that are more permissive than the state permits. That's just something that the state says you cannot require them to have a health permit if they're that small. So if you get someone who's got 75 square feet and they're selling raw vegetables, that's bigger than what the state allows them to operate without a health permit. So you could impose a health permit requirement for a business that size.
Okay. And in reading through the report, the two examples that we had of the two other cities, one was pretty extensive with, I like how they kind of spelled out violations and how they would be addressed and what you'd mentioned. It's not criminally enforced or they don't go to court over something.
Administrative.
It's not a crime. Yeah, it's administrative. But what it doesn't say is if a police officer should happen to drive by an operation that they're not sure if they're there legitimately with all the proper paperwork, they had approached the individuals and they don't have any of the things. What it doesn't say is that they can shut them down and tell them that they got to close up shop right now. It just says that they're going to get a ticket. So can, based on the way it's worded in here, would they be able to continue to operate until they're done selling their food that night? Or how can that be addressed? Or I want to make sure that they have the right, the legal means to be able to do what's necessary for what we're trying to accomplish here.
Sure. The initial approach would be to cite, and if the person didn't leave at that point, then you would escalate the situation. If necessary, if you found a violation of some other type of city ordinance that's unrelated to the vending, that would be an option. But it's the same as it would be with any type of code enforcement situation. We can put escalators into a proposed ordinance that deals with it. In the event a seller is cited for failing to comply with the ordinance and does not comply within 1 hour, shall be subject to additional citations or shall be subject to cessation of the business, something to that effect.
And I like that idea. I think that's a good response for that. The other things that we're talking about in here is the hours of operations, the locations, the city streets or areas of town where I don't know that we're necessarily equipped up here to be able to say, here's the streets that I think it's good and here's where I think it's bad and all that. But that's what I'd like to see city staff to be able to come back and say, here's where we think it's most appropriate. Here's where it's never appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. And in hours of operation, that's an open discussion. I think we can have certain areas.
Yeah, and I think if you take a look at Atascadero is obviously very different than Solvang or Pismo Beach, but if you take a look at one of the sidewalks downtown in Pismo Beach in the summer, you can barely walk down the sidewalk as it is. And if you had businesses setting up on those sidewalks and squeezing additional pedestrians into a much smaller area, it does create a safety hazard in that situation. So that's why the city down there decided to exempt certain portions of the downtown area from allowing this type of business. Atascadero is blessed with much larger spaces. We don't have the cramped quarters that Pismo Beach or even a Solvang has. So it may be more appropriate to just let it be where it is. If there are other areas, though, that could potentially constitute a hazard, for example, if you you wouldn't want anyone setting up one of these businesses on the sidewalk in front of the fire station, for example. There are places where you could restrict it that might not be specific to pedestrian access, but there may be some other public safety reasons you want to restrict them.
Okay, yeah, and I think the pedestrian access is important, and it should be spelled out in this, the required width for ADA compliance. I think it's 48 inches is what it's required, 36 for up to 2 feet or something. I mean, it gets kind of, I don't want to get into all the weeds of that, but the access, the ADA access, or just access in general, because they can easily go, well, I'll set up here and I'll keep that space open. And actually, you know, you're blocking it and nobody can get through unless you're actually in line and you get through the other end of it. So that's an important one to make sure that it's clear in the ordinance that we do. So that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, I do have a number of questions on this. Let me just start with
trying to understand the extent to which there's any sense of urgency about taking action. I know we've had a couple of large taco enterprise events recently. Have we been able to use existing authorities to ensure that if that was that the sidewalk wasn't being blocked and that public health codes were being followed if there was hot food being served? I'm looking at the police chief on that one.
Yes, Councilmember Funk. There has been some difficulties in that because you don't know where they're going to be and when they're going to be there. And to coordinate with county officials, you know, they might not be available at a call just to come out and help us. So typically we have to pre-coordinate with them, and then the taco stand might not show up that night. And so we have difficulties there. Also, there are some other statutes that do deal with blocking the sidewalk, but it doesn't necessarily deal with causing others to block the sidewalk. For example, when they set up, you know, their equipment may not be blocking a sidewalk, but the way they have it set up causes their customers to block the sidewalk. So I don't have something specific that I can lean on for that.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And if we've only had a couple of these events, we have some time maybe to work with this. Have there been any conversations currently with the Chamber of Commerce, with the school organizations that do a lot of events, raising funds and that kind of thing, and with our Hispanic business groups locally, who might be in closer touch with folks who are looking entrepreneurially to be able to do small-scale vending for whatever reason?
Yeah, my office has not done any outreach on this. This is kind of the first introduction to the law that we've provided to the council. It just became of interest because of the two taco enterprises that came up, that looking at the city's code, we don't have a way to address it one way or another, specifically in compliance with SB 946. So it's an opportunity for us to craft the ordinance according to the way that the council would like to see it done. And as that process continues, certainly staff can do outreach, provide draft copies of the ordinance that would be adopted or introduced by the council, and seek community input as part of that process. I don't know to what extent the community's interests are going to be necessarily consistent with the council's direction on it initially, but as part of that iterative process, as long as we're in compliance with SB 946 and the other two bills, that's council policy to make.
Okay, and certainly this council member would be keenly interested in having broad community input on this. There are a lot of traditions that we have in our community. Most of us have our favorite strawberry vendor or a place we get flowers for our spouse or other kinds of things. But and it's not entirely clear how all of these are impacted. So I'm going to just float a few things to see, might be affected or would not be affected by this. So let me start. We have a lot of events in the Lake Park where we have public pedestrian paths, and our vendors are for all those events, like the wine festival that we just had, or the Pride Festival, or any number of other events have vendors in pop-up tents along the pedestrian path. Would they be restricted by whatever ordinance we craft here?
You could put in a provision. There is a provision in SB 946 that says a local authority may prohibit stationary sidewalk vendors from vending in a park only if the operator of the park has signed an agreement for concessions that exclusively permits the sale of merchandise by the concessionaire. So, for example, if someone had rented out the park area and was attracting vendors for the event and the vendors had to pay that permit holder, that would be an exclusive operation. And that may be something that you want to include in the ordinance to limit that, where the park or portions of the park have been rented out or have been reserved for a special event like that.
Okay, but other than situations where the park's been rent, that space has been rented, the parks themselves would be available for small scale.
Correct.
Quote unquote sidewalk.
I'll say it this way, the city is restricted in the amount of restriction that it can impose in parks. If you have health, safety, welfare issues, for example, if you had a very steep portion of the park on the path, you might not want people setting up on that portion because the cart might roll away. So there may be provisions for health and safety reasons where you would restrict the location in the park.
Sure. And you know, some of that topography gets to be self-enforcing. Most people won't set up where it's going to fall down. Another question I have are situations like, you know, how does this affect, say, the Rotary or Kiwanis Club's barbecue that just happened this last week, where they are selling hot food in the park available? Would there be any restrictions on that?
That's a different situation. That's going to be pursuant to a permit to use the park. I would not expect that a sidewalk vendor would be in the same situation as Kiwanis. But again, if you're giving exclusive ability of Kiwanis to use a particular area of the park, bandstand, wherever, and they are doing concessions themselves there, you would have the power to restrict that under SB 946.
Okay, but this wouldn't affect... But the Kiwanis Club could still do their barbecue.
Yes.
They could still sell food to the public.
Yes.
In that, and we don't have to have a big fuss about whether whatever kitchen it's done in has a public health certificate.
Correct.
Okay. Another element of those kinds of events is, you know, folks like to have little bake sale things at the end of it. So you like get pick a few bucks extra and get a brownie or whatever. And those two are not going to be vendors that are going to have health and safety permits and that kind of thing. Would that be restricted by this kind of ordinance in any way?
Are you talking about like kids' lemonade stands and cookie stands, or are you talking about someone who's engaged in the business of doing this? I'm not clear on the question.
I'm thinking of mostly this is... Like at the Kiwanis, for example, Kiwanis Barbecue at the park a couple of Tuesdays ago, they had a little table there with a bunch of different folks had brought cookies and brownies and pies, and it's very tasty. I even applaud them for having a gluten-free option. But that, those were for sale as an additional to item. So this is essentially, they're in the park being, food being sold by a community organization. Are they going to be required to have, public health certificates and be made in commercial kitchens and sealed and that kind of stuff?
It's going to largely depend on whether or not they fall within the definition of the sidewalk vendor that you put into the ordinance. So if you have, for example, you want to exempt certain types of locations, certain types of products for health and safety reasons from being covered by the ordinance, that may be something you want to look at. The legislature has obviously included those types of exemptions for uncooked produce and what they call, I think it was low hazard, an uncooked provisions. I wasn't sure what would be a low hazard uncooked type of product, but that's the language that the legislature used. So you would have presumably the same type of discretion that the legislature has taken to regulate those types of things for health and safety reasons.
Sure. There is a list that's available on the California Department of Health website, because I looked it up the other day to see that. And And it's fairly specific as to, you know, your what kinds of ingredients you use in the icing on your cookies or your cupcakes, you know, and that kind of thing that is not necessarily where folks are paying attention. Okay. School bake sales that occur in, say, you know, parking the sidewalk outside of Vaughn's or that kind of thing.
Well, if they're outside of Vaughn's and they're just on private property, we're not going to be regulating that. If they're on public property, that's what we're going to be regulating.
Okay, so it's a sidewalk outside of Vaughn's, but you know, just right outside the building, it would still be their property.
Correct.
Okay, good enough. The specifics are important because people want to know how various traditions that we expect to have in the community are affected by anything that we're going to do. Okay, I think that'll handle my questions for now. I may come back to more later.
Good. Yeah, we can come back. In fact, we're going to go back to Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to follow up, and thank you, Councilmember Funk, for the concern about Kiwanis and how we conduct business. I am a longtime member. And I will say that every year we do get our health department certificate. So we are legitimately serving food wherever we serve food. We have the food booth at the fair and we do lots of barbecues around town all year long. So we are Kiwanis. Uh-huh. So we do everything on the up and up. So we're good. And we're all very careful with our sanitary things.
Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. Looking over some of the notes, and my colleagues have asked a lot of great questions, what type of staffing resources does the city have to enforce these regulations? Is it going to be code enforcement on a first offense, PD? What do we see that looking like?
I think that's really going to be up to the nature of the type of business that's in operation. It might be just code enforcement. It might be the police department if they're involved in additional non-ordinance issues. For example, you know, if they're blocking traffic and there are cars pulling up as a drive-through, that might be a traffic enforcement situation. So I think it's going to really depend in large part on what type of business is set up. But if you've just got a strawberry stand on a corner, with an umbrella over it and no one's stopping in the middle of traffic and there's no other complaints about that, I don't imagine that you're going to have a lot of staff involvement in that type of situation.
Okay. A couple things come to mind is like ECR and Santa Barbara, it's just right there in that turnout. And so it's always impeding traffic of the signal. So when we talk about those safety buffers, what type of spacing are we looking at between a light signal and a turnout?
I'd have to go back and take a look at a couple of the other ordinances, but I believe Pismo Beach's ordinance had some specifics as to where you could set up and could not set up at distance from the intersection. Those are certainly things that we would take a look at and see if there are other cities that have best practices at this point. One place where I can see where you might want to restrict is no businesses on medians in the middle of the street, because those can be traffic hazards. They can also be a hazard to the business owner. So you may want to prohibit that altogether if there's a median that they set up on.
Okay. And then we talked about private property we don't enforce. However, if some of these vendors are not getting permission from the property owners, do we step in and enforce?
They could certainly be cited for trespassing if the business owner doesn't want them there and they've been asked to leave. So there is another tool available to the city if they're on private property without the permission.
Okay. And then once we do, if we move forward with an ordinance, how will these people that are already used to a pop-up tent be notified of the existing ordinance? Will we be contacting them individually?
I think it's a little difficult if we don't know who they are or where they're popping up. That is one of the nature of the pop-up businesses, is they may not have a physical address that they're operating from. Certainly, it will be an educational process that we can do in our newsletter. That would be an opportunity. We could also do it through our social media. And it's an educational process once it's in place. If you roll up and see a business